Welcome to Foul Players Radio, your podcast for arts, entertainment, and pop culture. My name is Michael Spedden, your host. Every episode features interesting people with fun, fascinating stories about their journeys in the performing arts. Authors, actors, musicians, dancers, athletes, comics, you name it. Sit back, relax, and have a listen. Let's have some fun. Foul Players Radio is a proud production of the Foul Players Group and a proud member of the SJ Network. And welcome back to the quarantine edition of Foul Players Radio. My name is Michael Spedden. Tonight's guest is Rich Davis. Rich Davis comes back tonight to talk about his favorite horror movies, to plug some new music that he has out, and to talk about, you know, a couple of other things, different styles of movies, different styles of horror that we enjoyed growing up. And we had a great time. It's always good to talk to Rich. He has a new video and a new song coming out soon, which isn't quite ready yet, but he did promise us that he'll come back even again once that stuff is ready. Again, you can listen to Foul Players Radio. Please subscribe and check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Castro, Castbox. What else are we on here? Overcast, Stitcher. All of those areas, and also iHeartRadio, you can check us out too. Make sure you subscribe and give us a good review. We'll have Rich Davis with us right after these words.
Hey everybody, it's John Orlando from the PBD Cast. Are you wondering where you can find my podcast? Well, it's real simple. Just go over to pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, or it's available through all of those major podcasting platforms. Just search for it in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, iHeartRadio app. And don't forget that every single Monday night at 8 o'clock, I do a live broadcast of the week's episode of the PVDcast through the Facebook page. Just go over to Facebook.com and search for @PVDcast and join me every Monday night at 8 p.m. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. So I'll chat at each and every one of you later.
Hello, listeners. I've got some great news from one of our former guests. Barbara Bustard has just released a book called The Art of Healing, 12 step-by-step meditative art exercises for improved physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. Miss Bustard bares her soul and shows us who she is through her stories and exercises. This is a book to be felt and experienced, an artist's work. Art is a way to work through all that life gives us, whether it is happy, sad, or anything in between. Art is a creative, safe, healing, and everything special place. It is the place to work through the stress that underlies all disease. In her book, The Art of Healing, 12 step-by-step meditative art exercises for improved physical, mental, and spiritual well-being, Miss Bustard describes the process to make healing happen. The meditative exercises in this book are described in a very simple, clearly articulated manner. They are appropriate for any level of artistic experience. Just reading this book, Miss Bustard's exercises touch you at a feeling level. You are moved from your thinking analytical brain to creative expression. It is available now on Amazon for $29, and it's gotten many positive reviews from readers so far. So pick up your copy today. Her website is artforbodymindandsoul.com. Also remember, the holidays are just around the corner. We all love to support our local small businesses and artists. Make sure you get your copy today. It makes a great gift. Foul Players Radio is now a proud affiliate of the SJ Network. If you're a performer, an actor, musician, filmmaker, author, you name it, in need of a good publicist, call Steve Joyner, 816-605-4561, or you can email him at stevesjnetwork@gmail.com. He has many years of experience in the entertainment business. He's competent, confident, and takes great care of his clients. He would be the publicist for you. Call Steve at 816-605-4561 or stevesjnetwork@gmail.com.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Christopher Stolle of Breaking the Fourth Wall. If you enjoy our show, you can find it on YouTube. Just look up Realm of the Mist Entertainment, or just look up Realm of the Mist Entertainment on Anchor.fm, Apple iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, or wherever quality podcasts can be heard. And also, you can find us on all the social medias. Just look for Realm of the Mist Entertainment, and I will catch you on the other side.
I'm Michael, the host of the semi-monthly podcast, In a City Like Yours. Join me as I chat with interesting people with interesting life stories. You can listen to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. You can follow us on Twitter at IACLYS Podcast, as well as on Facebook and Instagram at In a City Like Yours Podcast. Please feel free to let me know what you think and keep coming back for the many interesting stories in a city like yours.
Hey, this is Don Smith from the Life Radio Show. If you've always wanted to learn more about the world of low-budget filmmaking and even lower-budget comedy, tune into the Life Radio Show. You can live stream the show at WWSU1069.org on Tuesdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, or find us wherever you find podcasts and like and follow the Life Radio Show on Facebook for live video and other shenanigans.
Hey, what's up? This is Christopher Stolle of Realm of the Mist Entertainment. The podcast you are listening to is part of the SJ Network. Go to s-j-network.com. That's s-j-network.com for more great podcasts and information on those shows, as well as information and ability to contact publicist Steve Joyner for more information. Just go to the website and check out the family. Ladies and gentlemen, until then, enjoy the show.
So, Rich, welcome back to the show. It's good to talk to you again, buddy. How are you?
It is great to be back. I'm doing great. Everything's doing great here. Got a new song. Getting ready to come out. Shooting a video the second week in November. So I'm really excited. That's got a ton of stuff and preparations and props I'm making right now. So I'm really, really excited about this new one.
Well, that's great to hear. And I'm glad to hear about that. And Yeah. So I can't wait to see the video when it's ready and to hear the song when you finally have all the tweaking and, mastering and mixing and all that finished. And I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I really enjoyed the material you shared with us last time, the old and the new. And
okay, great.
I'm glad to hear that you got something else coming out. So,
yeah. Excited.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations. So tonight we kind of brought you back to talk about, it seems like what every headbanger's favorite holiday is, and that's Halloween. We have a tendency, it seems like just about everybody in the arts loves Halloween. I guess it kind of gives everybody a chance to be creative and come up with costumes, but it seems like a lot of people really like the horror end of it, the scary side of it, and horror movies. So I asked you on tonight to talk about your favorite ones, and what do you like? What kind of horror movies are you into?
Well, let's see. I mean, I'm really not. I mean, when I got older, like in my, I'm in my mid 50s. I'm 54.
Yeah.
I haven't been into the horror movies for like probably 20 years now. But
sure. Yeah.
I mean, in all my videos, you can tell that I am a horror buff. I love this time of the year, Halloween. Mm-hmm. This whole time is my favorite time of the year for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
The reason I got into this horror stuff, I mean, I've got, going back to my first movies, like, let's just start about with my very first movie. I tried to research to find out what this very first one was that made such an impact on my life. And I could not remember the name of it, but I must have been like 5 or 6.
Uh-huh.
And it was a werewolf movie.
Okay.
And all I remember was the werewolf, before he attacked, he had the breathing.
Okay. Okay.
And back when I was a kid, I had an old, what do you call that old time chest? Whatever it was, this one old chest that for when they traveled. They put the clothes in there. I can't think of the name of them.
Cedar chest?
I had that in my room, and then I would hear the breathing, and I remember getting all freaked out. Well, of course, I'm hearing myself breathe, and it freaked me out. So that was like my very first you know, movie that actually scared the shit out of me and had the nightmares. But my first one that I actually, you know the name of was, I saw the movie Squirm.
Oh, okay.
I think that came out, I think that was like, it came out in like 76 or something like that.
Sure.
And you remember, you ever heard of that where the, it was a big storm or something like that. And, the lightning hit the electric pole and the electric lines went over and shocked the ground. And all of a sudden the earthworms became like man eaters and stuff like that. That movie was my first one that again scared the everything out of me.
Yeah. You know, in that era, it seems like, you know, with horror, with the genre of horror, you know, there were a number of phases that it kind of went through. You know, it seems like, you know, when the first horror movies came out years ago,
right,
you know, they were based on the traditional stories and literature. You know, you had your Dracula, you had your Frankenstein, you had your werewolf, right, and then the Mummy. And then it kind of moved into, you know, when we got to the 70s, the horror movies kind of, there was sort of a genre in a number of years where there was like a lot of natural disasters or environmental disasters, which turned animals wild, or there was some sort of like a deformity, like in Prophecy, based on pollution, or even.
So many great horror movies came out in the 70s.
They did.
On my list of movies, probably half of them, or more than half of them, were from the 70s.
Right. But Squirm, yeah, that, and again, you were talking about how the electric lines hit the ground and that did that to the worms. I mean, you can think of so many more, you know, that were animals or natural disasters or some kind of disaster, you know, man-made even too, you know? So yeah.
Right. But the list that I had, these are just, I mean, it's just like music. Everybody has their own little one that did something. And these are the ones that had an impact on me growing up. And first was the Werewolf with the Breathing, and then the Squirm. That one really freaked me out. But then when I got a little older, I was born in 66, so I guess I'm starting to get like in my, you know, 10, 12, and just going to the theater. And I guess back, you know, again in the, So some of the ones on my list are in the 70s, but I didn't get to watch them or enjoy them until later.
Sure.
But the next movies that really made the impact on me was the Freddy Krueger, the Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I only, you know, of course the first one, and I think, you know, but I don't think that the first one, I don't think came out till 84.
Yep.
So I love that. And then of course the next one, and then the Dream Warrior. Those were like the three that I remember watching. I think I kind of lost interest after the Dream Warrior. Maybe I might have watched the ones after that, and they weren't scary anymore. Or
right.
I don't know. But you know, of course, the very first one was just—I mean—so awesome.
Oh, sure.
You know, I think that was Wes Craven that wrote that and directed that, which was really cool.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And then of course the Dream Warrior, because I remember, you know, obviously Dokken did the song, and you can picture the video with George Lynch busting through the wall, playing his skeleton guitar, doing a rip of the solo.
Oh, yeah. Those were great. I can remember seeing the first one in the theater. I saw it with a number of friends of mine. We went out and saw it that night, and the thing that I really liked about it, and I'm sure that you agree too, was the fact that, you know, all the ways people died and all the ways he came at people were things that we have nightmares about. Like when the kid was running up the steps to get away and the steps turn into mush and he can't run.
Yeah.
And So it was those kinds of things, I guess, huh?
Yeah. So I really loved, I love getting this, you know, being really scared.
And that was really original, you know, that type of thing. It wasn't like just a typical slasher, you know. It was the fact, and everybody could identify with those different types of dreams and nightmares, I think. And all the things like, you know, you're running hard and, you know, whatever's after you keeps gaining on you and you can't get away. And even at the beginning, when he was walking up the alley towards those people and his arm got real long.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, things like that too, you know. And but I mean,
who hasn't had those dreams before where they're trying to run away and your feet are just like not moving fast enough?
Yeah, I know. Or, yeah, exactly. Or, you know, you're trying to run up the steps or something like that, and the steps are like turning to mush and you're sinking down.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, that's just that was just really well done and really creative and everything.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely. Love that. Yeah, love that.
I don't know that we needed 42 of them, but, you know, we did.
They really pushed their.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should have stopped it like the. I don't know. I mean, I give whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the first couple of ones, really, I really enjoyed them.
Mm-hmm.
See, what else were some of the. But then one of my, you know, for being scary, I think one of the all-time scary movies in my mind is The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, Linda Blair. And I think that was an early 70s, 73, mm-hmm. I think. But
yep. Mm-hmm.
That was a, you know, I love that movie. Every time I see it, I watch it still. I try to show it to my girls and, you know.
Mm-hmm. How old are your girls?
They're 18. A 20-year-old girl.
Oh, yep. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, that's all. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. It's good to share things. You know, one thing that I've noticed a lot of, and it's like guys that we played music with back in those days, it seems like a lot of them are bringing up their kids and sharing stuff that we liked back in, and these kids love it. Is that the same experience with you?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
They love the music, you know, they're really into it. You know, they enjoy the music from back in those days and the movies and all the stuff that we kind of liked. And I'm seeing my friends with their kids walking around in like Led Zeppelin and Iron Maiden t-shirts and stuff like that. And I'm like, yes,
that's incredible. Awesome.
Thank God, you know?
of course with The Exorcist, I remember watching that, and then The Omen. I don't know if The Omen came out around the same time as The Exorcist. I can't remember.
I believe so. Yeah, that was right in that same time frame. Yeah.
I didn't like The Exorcist 2 that much, just mm-hmm. like I didn't like The Omen 2.
Right, right.
What was The Omen 2? The Heretic or something like that?
Yeah.
But The Omen was another great one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Damien the boy or whatever, with the 666 on his head, and he had to shave the head to try to find it, that birthmark on his head. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. What a classic. And
yeah.
Yep.
I think my favorite scene was when the guy was, you know, that one cart with the big piece of glass was on it, and he rolled down the hill and then chopped the guy's head off.
Yeah, I know. Some of the deaths in that movie too were just, you know.
Yeah,
they really they did a good job on that one. I agree with you. Yeah.
You know, some of the, you know, I guess back this, it's hard for me to get scared. I don't get scared anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I like the suspense of things, but it's like when you get older, you know exactly when it's going to happen. So happy, and you know that's just setting you up for the music to change and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember, you know, growing up being, you know, younger with the, I guess, what was it, the Halloween movies? Was that the Jason Myers or Michael Myers?
Michael Myers, yeah, yeah.
Because I remember, I loved the suspensefulness of, the suspenseful part when he was coming at you or whatever, was that mm-hmm. sound effects with
that was Jason.
Oh, that was Jason?
Michael Myers had different music. He had like that
which one was the then that was Jason.
That was the Friday the 13th movies. Yeah.
Oh, Friday the 13th. Yeah. And they were kind of very similar, but very cool for their time.
Oh, definitely. Most definitely. Yeah. Both of them had the killer that wouldn't die or they would kill him and he'd always wake up at the end, or, you know, they'd shoot him and then he'd be gone. And
so what was first, the Halloween or the Friday the 13th?
Oh, I think Halloween was first.
Okay.
Yeah. Halloween came out in 78. And I think Friday the 13th probably came out in 80.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And, Right. Yeah. It was 78 was for Halloween. So that had Jamie Lee Curtis in it. And right. then, Friday the 13th came out. I think the first one came out in 80.
Okay.
But they didn't have, I think it was until the second or third one that they actually had the, hockey masked Jason in it. Because at first he was just a kid. And he actually had like a sack over his head as compared to the hockey mask. And then, I think it was like maybe probably the second installment that he had the hockey mask on. We're going back a long time for this.
Yeah, right.
But I think that's how the series
I don't went. Remember the mask over his face, though. I don't know why I don't. I remember the hockey mask, obviously, but not the other.
Yeah.
Just the,
Yep. Yep. And, those were both great. Those are both great. And I liked how, you know what Michael Myers' mask was, right?
Right, yeah. Gotcha, right, yep.
It was a William Shatner mask that they painted white.
Was it really?
Yeah. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. It was a rubber mask of William Shatner. I guess it was like a Star Trek thing or something, and they just painted the whole thing. They kept the hair, but they painted the whole thing white.
Wow, that is cool trivia. I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And did you see any of the remakes of Halloween that Rob Zombie did? Did you enjoy those, or did you get a chance to see them?
I haven't seen them in a long time. Can't remember.
Yeah. I thought he did a pretty good job with them, truthfully. Kind of expanded and enhanced the original storyline, kind of expanded what Michael Myers' background was a bit.
Okay.
But I think he did a good job with it. And they expanded a little bit more on the mental institution and, how he was raised and everything. And I think Rob Zombie did a wonderful job with it. Opinions are like a-holes. Everybody's got one.
Right,
and,
right.
There are some people out there that, it would never get better than the original. But there are sometimes some remakes actually do things justice. And I think, they tell the story a little bit better or kind of expand upon the story and kind of stay true to it too, but they add a little more detail, make it a little more interesting,
cool.
So Friday the 13th and Halloween. Yeah. They're both, well done, both pretty iconic, I think too,
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, then of course, back in the '70s, then of course, it was a scary movie, but it wasn't really, Jaws.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, that still holds the test of time. Mm-hmm. Is one of the greats. I could watch that anytime still.
Mm-hmm. Such a classic. And there were so many stories behind that movie too. A lot of the way that movie ended up being shot was because they were having problems getting the shark to work correctly.
Right.
So they ended up not showing the shark as much as they really would have, which I think ended up working in their favor. Actually ended up making it being a little bit more like a Hitchcock movie in a lot of ways, where you really didn't see the monster as much, but you saw the reactions to it, or you caught a glimpse of it here or there, and that made it a lot scarier.
Wasn't a robot called Bruce or something like that?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yeah, it was. And I had a guest on the show, David Bigelow, not too long ago, who was one of the kids on the beach during the scene where the boy got eaten on the raft.
Really? Oh, that's really neat.
Yeah. And he was telling me about that whole story. As a matter of fact, it was Alex Kintner. And his mother, the lady that played his mother, she went over and slapped Roy Scheider.
Right. Yeah.
She was actually
closing the beach. Right.
Yeah. And she was actually that boy's acting teacher and chose him for the movie. She was a local acting teacher up in Martha's Vineyard at the time and was in charge of getting kids together for the beach scene. But that was really a great one. And I've spoken a lot about Jaws too, because that's what was one of my favorites over the years too. But the thing is that that movie came out in 75. Okay. Did you see it when it first came out?
Yes.
You did? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't quite allowed to yet because I was only six, okay, when it first came out. And I really didn't see the movie until I was about 10 because a friend of ours got a VHS player and I got to see it there. But the poster was enough to scare the hell out of me.
Right. Yeah. No kidding.
Yep. I mean, that shark was big enough to eat that woman in one bite. And needless to say, that kind of tainted my Assateague Island vacations for the next couple of summers after just looking at that poster.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what's cool about that movie is it really affected you. I mean, mm-hmm. people going swimming after watching as a little kid.
I know. And then they do everything to assure you for years and years and years and years that that's not going to happen. Sharks are way out in the ocean. And then all of a sudden in recent years, they show all these aerial shots of people swimming and you can see a shark in the water like 10 feet mm-hmm. away. And nobody knows. And you're like, geez,
yeah.
You know, maybe Jaws was right.
Right. Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but there was like a whole pattern with a lot of those movies in the 70s, you know, like we had mentioned, about like the animal movies. There was like Prophecy, and then you had mentioned Squirm, and there was one about bees, and then there was one about rabbits. And then there was one about, I think there was Grizzly, and then there was Orca. And all of it's about, you know, nature turning on man or man not heeding something that they should be listening to.
Grizzly was a good one. I remember that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there was all of those. And, you know, and then there was the other ones that were like natural disasters or man-made, like the Towering Inferno, which you could look at as a horror movie or not quite a horror movie. It's kind of like Jaws, you know.
And Poseidon Adventure.
But Poseidon Adventure.
That was one of my favorites too.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
That was a great movie.
Yep. And the airport movies as well. You know, Airport 70 or Airport 75, Airport 77, you know, you're on a plane and something horrible happens and they got to get the plane down and people die on the way to having it happen.
Right.
Yeah. All of those, you know, were kind of about, we're just kind of about those things. And then, you know, and they were scary to a point because, you know, a lot of things that were, you know, man tried to gain control back over the situation. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that things, you know, were just a little bit bigger sometimes. They really had right. to, figure something out to, you know, to make it right.
Right.
Yeah. But, yeah, that was just, you know, just a great era for film all around, whether it be horror or any genre, really, you know?
Absolutely.
Yep. Yep.
I guess more on the modern side. I mean, I think the Saw movies were pretty cool. I mean, the reason I like the Saw movies, you know what I mean, kind of were because I like the gadgetry that they had to come up with for these deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Like the big rigs around their head, and if this doesn't happen, then it all the you see the gears move, and all of a sudden it slices their head off or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. That's the truth. I know that was a really creative movie. In a time when there was just a lot of you know, slasher movies and things were getting kind of tired, I think.
Yeah.
It was really creative. It was cerebral, I guess you could kind of call it, you know.
Yeah.
It kind of got into your head. It made you think, you know. I guess you kind of know what I'm trying to say, you know. It was something that was a little more psychological, as well as being gory too.
Standard run of the mill, you know, the girl they run and hide in the room and the slasher gets them and stuff like that. It was mm-hmm. the deaths. I mean, I guess they kind of like thought about the ending of the death scene first and then wrote the plot around it or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, again, that was kind of like every so often you get a movie that comes out in a certain genre that, you know, is almost like a breath of fresh air.
Right.
You know, they kind of take something in a direction that things haven't gone in a while, or they kind of pull the genre out of something, that may be getting a little stagnant or something like that. It's right. It's always neat to see something like that, you know?
And then, of course, the other side with the of a new topic would be the alien movies.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And they're I think they were great.
And that was another one, too, almost like Jaws, where you really didn't see the alien that much.
Right.
Until, you know, pretty much the end. And then, you know, you finally got to see what was tormenting all those people. I mean, you got to see the baby one at the beginning when it come busting out of that guy's chest. You know, but
Who was the one who drew them? Is it Geiger? Is he the did he come up with the monster in that or no?
I think so. Yeah, I think he did. I forget the guy's name, but I know who you're talking about. I know who you're talking about, but I just don't
remember that came up with that monster or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that was,
those were great movies. I really love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too. I agree with you. Very well done. You know, very well done. And again, yeah, they're very creative. They didn't overdo it with the gore and, you know, they kind of kept, again, they did a good job of keeping the, monster secret.
Right.
Until, you know, you absolutely had to see it or, you know, the time was exactly right, you know? And,
And for the modern side, I like, you know, if I'm going to watch a horror movie, I want them to make the gore scenes really authentic looking. And I think one of the movies that kind of pulled that off good was all the, now it's slipping my mind, the Final Destination movies. Maybe it's just the first one and two or something like that. But the death scenes in these Final Destination, am I saying that right? Final Destination?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that they might do it really quick where it's, you know, they only show it for like 2 seconds, but that's enough.
Yes. Yes. You're right. Yeah. That's another interesting story and another interesting kind of take on movies, you know, that those Final Destinations. I've seen bits of some of those, and again, very interesting, very interesting.
Premonition that it's going to happen and kind of foreseeing the accident and then, you know, not getting on the highway or not getting on the plane, and then people die in order of how they would have died, and
yeah,
and then you can't see death if you know,
mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I know those, yeah, again, you know. More creativity, more, you know, taking a new twist and taking a new step and, you know, just kind of stepping back and looking at things a little bit differently, I think. You're right. Definitely right about that.
The cool thing about that movie is you know that they're going to die.
Right.
So you know that it's them. So every time they show the one character that's kind of next and you see, like, the scissors falling off the table, is that going to be it? Nope, that's not it. It's the water tripping on the electrical socket. Is that going to be it? That's not going to be it.
Right.
It triggers this, which triggers that, and then, you know, mm-hmm. something falls on their head or whatever.
Yeah, yep. I know. You're right. You're absolutely right. I agree with you 100%.
So that's kind of my take. I don't really watch horror movies too much.
Sure. But you've got some good ones.
I mean, all those movies are all great. And one other one I didn't mention was the Hellraiser movies.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I love those because, mm-hmm. and the movies were actually, I don't know whether the plot line was just horrible or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember the storyline being that great, but the characters, Pinhead.
Mm-hmm.
And then that one character that would just crunch his, you know, snap its teeth together.
Right.
They were so, the you know, what the designer, the way they, you know, made them all so weird looking.
Mm-hmm.
That made them really stand out as being really scary movies.
Yes, it did. It did. And that first one was pretty damn gory, too. I mean, that just tore that guy to shreds. It just left clumps of meat everywhere. I remember that.
Yeah, he was all great. The days came and grabbed him and just put him apart.
Mm-hmm. I'd have ripped him up with, you know, there was like, you know, all these hooks went into the guy and just completely shredded him. And I'm like,
right.
Damn, you know. Those were pretty interesting, too, I thought. I haven't seen all of them, but I think I saw like the first two of them. I know I saw the first one at least. And yeah, very interesting. Yeah, it was well done, I thought, you know.
right, with that cube or whatever, the box or whatever. I can't remember what the plot, what that was, the plot of that.
Yeah, I think when you opened the box, it opened the gates to hell and those...
Oh, that has to be it.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Right.
Right, and, like, nobody was supposed to mess with the box, but if you messed with the box and it, like, it would, like, kind of... It was like people would, like, try to twist it like a Rubik's Cube.
Right.
And all of a sudden it would just open up on its own, it seemed like, and, like, twist or something and come down in a different way. And that would open up, the you know, for those creatures to come out.
Right.
And then I had heard that later on in those movies that they actually gave backstories on a number of those creatures, too.
Did they?
Yeah.
How many different movies were there in the Hellraiser series? Do you know?
Oh, I think at least, I know at least four.
Okay, wow.
At least four. It may have been six, but I can't remember, you know. I was one of those people that I kind of gave up on sequels after a while.
Me too.
You know, usually two is enough for me. Usually two sequel, you know, one and two is enough for me. Then after that, because it's not the same director, it's not the same producer. A lot of times it's not the same actors that are in it. And
right.
The story gets different and, you know, it just kind of loses something after a while, you know, I mean, I know it's something that, you know, the diehard fans always enjoy and, you know, the people that really follow those series stick with it, you know. I mean, the Harry Potter ones, you know, with all the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, sure. Out, yeah. You know, right. Yeah. They were all evenly good.
Right. Right. But after a while, it gets to the point with some of these, when you get up to, you know, part 7, 8, 9, 10. I mean, come on, you know. It's just to the point where it's just not even worth watching. I guess, you know, not sure why they make those movies, but, you know, who knows? You know, maybe it's a tax write-off or something for the studio. You know?
Well, they know they had a good thing at one point. They're still trying to ride it out, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. Or maybe give some younger filmmakers or some younger talent that they're trying to give them a chance to showcase themselves and see what they can do for other projects, you know?
That could be.
Yeah.
See, I remember when we're talking about the Cube and the Hellraiser, there was a movie called 13, I think it was, with the 13 ghosts.
Yes.
Remember that they're in a house and, like, the walls are all made out of see-through, like, plexiglass or whatever, and in the center of the room it would spin, and then the glass would all shift, and then the ghosts could move around.
Oh.
That one? And there was, like, a little girl was one of them, and there was, like, a guy with a big axe or something, or a big hammer, and they're all demons locked in this house. And
okay, okay. Yeah, it's been a while. I think I have seen that, though.
That was a pretty good one.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that's cool. Of course, a classic back in there, and it was Poltergeist.
Of course, Poltergeist.
I mean, it was definitely one of the greats.
Mm-hmm. The Clown. Do you remember The Clown?
Yeah.
That was my favorite part of that.
Had that clown sitting in a rocking chair as a kid. No way.
I know.
No way. God, and then, of course, how confusing to the poor little girl. Go to the light. Go away from the light. Go to the light. It's like, make up your mind.
I know. Go to the light. Go away from the light. And then, but the thing is with The Clown.
Yeah.
You know, when in history did kids ever like clowns is what I want to know, because it seems like whenever you go to a haunt, I mean, if you go to Kim's, half of the characters are clowns.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that's just gotten to be scary. You know, I remember as a little kid, I was never too sure about clowns. You know, yeah, I saw one time at a birthday party that made me laugh, but I was at an event one time, and there was a clown walking around, and his nose came off, and it scared the hell out of me, and it gave me nightmares. I was like,
"Well, that's a good question to try to figure out." It's like, when did clowns were all, first off? I'm sure were there to entertain.
Yeah.
Children. When would this first transformation go? Because now clowns are more scary than happy, and.
Yeah.
It's like, what was the first scary clown, I wonder?
I know. And the thing was that, you know, I mean, clowns were supposed to be the comic relief at circuses.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, they were, and there was, like, different types, too. I mean, like, I think the ones with the white makeup were supposed to be like a different type of character than the ones that had like the tan makeup. And then they had like the tramps. You know, there was like ones that were supposed to be like the good guy. One was supposed to be the bad guy. And they were all supposed to be, I'd read something about this. And all the clowns, like with Ringling Brothers and everything, all of their makeup, all their patterns of makeup is like copyrighted. So, and that's an interesting thing too.
Wow. Each one of the clowns, the makeup design was copyrighted.
Yeah. Or like patented, or, you know, like they have their own trademark on it or something.
Wow. Interesting. That's really neat.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but it was always like, I'm just wondering who the target audience was. I'm guessing, like in the beginning, how cartoons were actually made more for adults than they were for kids. I'm guessing maybe this was for adults, you know, as compared to kids. You know, maybe adults thought it was funny and kids thought it was scary. If you think about it, then I don't know. I'd really have to research that to figure it out. But just about every kid I know, just, I remember there was like a lady at White Marsh Mall who was a clown there who just retired. He was there for like 30 years or something.
Okay.
And all the kids loved her because I guess she was like non-threatening or whatever. But for some reason, there's just some kind of scary quality to it where you're just like not sure about it or something. And it just doesn't, it just scares people. And, it's just scary instead of amusing or cute or funny or whatever. And it seems like when they've had movies come out like Killer Clowns from Outer Space and that other one, Terrifier. And then of course, you know, everything about John Wayne Gacy with him being the clown. I mean, it seems like they're more horror characters than they are amusing.
And now the It movie.
That Stephen King one, It, sure. Sure, yeah.
You would have thought clowns would have stayed being a happy thing and all the mimes would have been the scary ones.
That's true, too, because mimes can be kind of disturbing.
They need a good mime movie.
Right, yes, they do. Yes, they do, a mime movie. something about, I know.
Where it's all subtitles.
Right, right, yeah.
Subtitles. Might be onto something.
Yeah, it would be. It would be. Subtitles because the mimes were bad.
Well, because they don't say anything, so,
Right. Well, they don't say anything, but then, the subtitles are there because you can't tell what they're doing. They're that bad of a mime that,
Right.
Who's that comedian says, I had a part-time job one time. I was a narrator for bad mimes.
Oh, right. There you go.
Yeah, but mimes, they can be kind of creepy too, I guess, and then even too in The Warriors, you remember that movie, The Warriors?
Love that movie. Yeah, it was great.
The baseball gang, they kind of look like clowns with baseball bats too. You remember those guys?
Yep.
The Furies, I think they were called. I guess that was another reason too.
Are they the ones who killed Osiris? Or whatever, was it Osiris or something like that?
No. The guy who killed Cyrus was the guy who said, his name was, God, I can't remember what his name was, but he was the one who was going, Warriors, come out and play.
Right.
Yeah.
That was a great movie.
That was a classic right there. And you know, there was kind of a horror element to that too. It was the suspense of them, trying to get through all the rough parts of New York on foot and being chased by everybody.
Right.
And then not all of them made it too, just like a horror movie, just like Friday the 13th. They start off with like 8 kids and 3 make it or 2 make it or something, And that was just like them, a good number of them got killed or just didn't make it along the way. And it was like at the end, all those people showed up on the beach, because they confronted that gang that killed Cyrus.
Right, yeah.
And then there's, like, 5 warriors left in, like, 300 of every other gang.
Right.
I mean, I could imagine the Warriors must have been some tough guys because, with 5 of them and 300 of every other gang, and they still held their own.
That's kind of scary because that's New York, and
Yeah.
You know, Mystic Force, we played it up in New York a bunch of times. And I remember we wouldn't go on stage till 2:30, 3 in the morning. So we would get on the subway trains and just go, you know, all over the place from train to train. And never ran into any guy on roller skates with makeup on.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah, right.
Thank
God. I know. Yeah, we used to play at CBGB's, Orange Seed Parade. We used to play at CBGB's and, you know, go up, you know, there all the time. And I go up there, well, since COVID, I haven't. But, I mean, I'm usually up there once or twice a month anyhow for auditions or something. And once you get to know your way around a little bit, it's not as bad. But when you're in a new town like that, and the thing, when you're in a new city like that where you don't know your way around, and the thing is, it's like New York's like 50 times bigger than Baltimore.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you know, Baltimore, you know, you have your downtown area, you have your farther out area, but it's like there, like the equivalent of like what looks like the downtown area in Baltimore goes on for miles.
It seems huge.
You know? And the thing is, you know, being the fear of getting lost, the fear of like getting stuck, like losing your wallet or something, or, and then you and so many movies just don't paint a rosy picture of New York. I mean, you know, what movie about New York is out there that doesn't have people getting mugged or the subway's the scariest place on earth or something, you know? It's, so yeah, that's, you know, kind of how the Warriors could kind of end up in this genre a little bit, you know, that whole thing of the unknown and just, you know, the suspense of, you know, being out there on your own and not knowing what's going to happen and, that whole thing, you know, let me ask you, a couple more of them that, you know, a couple of them that I had, and I'm not sure, you know, maybe I could ask you and, see what you thought of them. Back in like 87, and I'm sure you might remember this, Faces of Death came out, and there were a number of movies that came out.
Traces of Death, right. There was a bunch. There was a, and the thing was back then, what was the place you could rent the movies? The big DVD rental place, Blockbuster.
Yeah, yeah.
You go there, and there's Faces of Death 1, Faces of Death 2, Traces of Death. Yeah, we rented those. Couple times, and that's when I, you know, I mean, they're just so gross, but you got like, I don't know why I felt like obligated to watch people die.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, but like a rite of passage, you got to see this stuff or whatever.
Yeah. 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 I mean,
I think that's when I started getting out of, you know, being scared of horror movies and stuff like that. It's like, you know, what scares me now is just reality. Driving an automobile is terrifying.
Oh, it is. It is. Especially now with people being distracted, you know, being on their phones and all that other jazz going on. And the thing is too, it's like, people aren't driving as much now. And it's almost like when you see people on the road, it's like, they're almost rusty.
Yeah.
I think I actually drive like 3 times a month lately, you know, as compared to, you know, driving right. every day. And, it is kind of scary, but what I was kind of referring to when I brought up the Faces of Death is, do you remember how it always had on the label? It always had on the label, you know, banned in X amount of, it was always like 198 countries or something like that. And I think half of those labels, you know, banned in more countries than we actually have on Earth.
Really?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I think I was looking at it one time, and I looked up how many countries we had, and it was actually more. But then again, maps and countries change all the time, too. And I remember I had a job. I got off on a Saturday night, and I came home, and I guess it was like 10 o'clock. So I went in my room, and I turned on the radio, and I was just going to relax. And then I hear this thing, you know, banned in 200 countries. This movie is the scariest thing you're ever going to see. And pregnant women are not allowed in. And people with heart conditions are now not allowed in.
Well, I got to see that one.
Yeah. And yeah, right. Exactly. And absolutely nobody under 18 is allowed in the theater for this. And I was like, oh boy, this is my Saturday night. Here we go. So I got up to the theater and I got my gigantic popcorn and my big Pepsi. And I went in and sat down, and it was The Evil Dead 2.
Okay.
And that movie is hysterical. Of course, it's gory, it's bloody, but it's like slapstick. It's just a lot of slapstick, a lot of silliness. The movie's actually, it's really funny. It's almost a farce or a spoof on horror movies in a way. But there's like a real serious element to it. You know, that they never break character and really make it lighthearted, but you know, the plot and everything just goes along, and you know, the way the evil spirits and everything are in the movie, it ends up being pretty comical, to watch it. And I was like, you know, well played. You got me into the theater expecting to really be disturbed. And then all of a sudden we're watching this, and I was like, well done. That's what you call marketing right there. You know?
So they didn't play the Faces of Death.
Well, no, it wasn't Faces of Death. It was The Evil Dead 2, but they used that phrase banned in so many countries.
Gotcha. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I got up there and it was The Evil Dead 2. And you know, one thing that I kind of remember from back then, and I don't know if you agree with this or not. There were a lot of movies, you know, whether they be horror or not, I used to go to the video store to rent them. Cause sometimes, you know, somebody would recommend a movie that was classic, you know, like the French Connection, or, you know, a movie that came out in the '60s or seventies, and you would go to rent the movies, but the quality was so bad because the tapes were so worn out,
right?
Or they just didn't have a good copy. And this was back before digital re-enhancing,
right,
of movies. You would get these movies home and they were almost unwatchable and not very, sure. And you know, you'd end up giving up on them sometimes.
Sure.
And then, you know, thank God for channels like Turner Classic Movies and, you know, all these companies now that can take these movies and make the sound look good and make the color look good and everything.
Yeah. Right.
And, I've really enjoyed experiencing movies again that I hadn't seen before. You know, do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. It's great. I love that they did that in these movies and made it, you know, fixed the color on them, just like you said, the audio and stuff like that, and remastered whatever. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really cool to save some of these classics.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so Rich, it's been wonderful catching up with you. You know, I know I want to give you an opportunity to plug your music a little bit more here too. Everybody, I got a lot of good compliments. When you put some music on the last show that you did with us here at Foul Players Radio, and a lot of good compliments. And then we actually had a couple of people send me some messages that remembered Mystic Force, and a lot of people really enjoyed your interview in that episode.
Oh, that's great.
Yep. And so I figured I would have you back again. And, you know, you can come on anytime. Come back and see us anytime you want, whenever you have a new project coming out. Or if you just want to come on and talk about anything, you know.
When I get my new song and video done and out, and after give me like a week or so to push it, I'll give you a call as soon as it comes out, I'll send it right over to you.
Certainly.
And we can plan another time for me to come back on. It'd be great.
Oh, absolutely, Rich. Absolutely. So, go ahead and, shamelessly plug yourself here. And that didn't sound very nice, but you know what I mean? Shamelessly give us your plugs.
I mean, I guess if you want to, see some of my scary horror movies, go to, richdavismusic.com. Mm-hmm. And then I've got, you know, a solo section, my band Shift that I was in the Mystic Force. But go to the solo section and check out my videos. I mean, because almost all my videos have the horror theme to them.
Mm-hmm.
Check them out, and hope you'll like my music and stuff like that. And you can Facebook friend me, request me, Rich Davis Music Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And Rich Davis Music at Instagram.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So this was a treat. It was fun to, when you told me about this, to think about some of these movies and what made the impact on me over the years. And it was kind of neat to go back to rethink about them. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. It really is neat to do that, and I enjoy having these conversations with our guests, especially this time of the year. You know, I've had a number of people on that were, well, I've got a couple of authors coming on, and I've had a couple of people that were, you know, in horror movies over the years, and it's really been just a good time hearing people talk about these things, all their favorite ones that they've enjoyed, and why they like them, and talking about the different styles of horror that have been out for the last, 70 or 80 years. It's just a good time getting everybody's take on it and seeing what they enjoy. And it turns out like a lot of people enjoy the same things, but then we do get people that bring up different things that not a lot of other people have brought up. So it's always fun to get people's perspective on this stuff here.
Because they might talk about this movie that really was, they thought was great. And you're like, well, maybe I should revisit that. And then you watch it again with an open mind or a fresh thinking. And you're like, wow, now I kind of see the movie as, wow, that is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, wonderful, Rich. Well, thank you again so much for coming back with us here. Best of luck with the new music and the video and everything coming out. And you've told everybody where you can hear and see your videos. And, always a pleasure, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you've been listening to Rich Davis on Foul Players Radio. Thank you all for tuning in, and we will see you next time. Take care.
Howdy. It's Matt Gwynn here, popping in to let you know about the adventures of the albino rhino. It's a show. Frank the Giraffe here, my co-host, James Godwin, and myself put on for you guys twice a week. Every Wednesday, we talk to a comedian, and every Friday, we call it Freak Yeah Friday. The show itself is not safe for work, and that freak is definitely a different word. I just don't know what podcast you're going to be listening to this promo on, and I don't want to, start screaming explicatives while you're sitting in your office, if you're lucky enough to have been able to go back to the work that you did before inside of an office or whatever, But we go on an adventure twice a week, and it's a good time because we get to sit down and talk to some really cool people. And I enjoy it because, I'm just curious little albino who likes to get to know folks, You can find us a couple ways, actually multiple ways, really. Man, there's a lot of different ways to find us. You can find us through our central hub, which is www.albinorhino.me. It's the website. Find me on. And then, the podcast, you can find the videos on YouTube. Search for Adventures of the Albino Rhino. Also linkable from our website. And you can also find us through Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Radio Public, and Spotify. That's right. We're on the same place Joe Rogan is. Granted, we're not the Joe Rogan Experience, but you know what I mean? We're there. So give us a listen. Promise you won't be dissatisfied. And enjoy your day.
What is going on, minions? Mike here for Misery Point Radio, and you're listening to the Coast to Coast Power Hour on the SJ Network. Now, I know what you're thinking. Mike, what the F is a Coast to Coast Power Hour? Well, my uneducated and uninformed friend, the Coast to Coast Power Hour is a Borg-like collective of epic podcasters from epic podcasts that have all come together to discuss the important things in life. Pop culture, current events, random awesomeness, stuff like that. Trust me, you need this in your life. For more information on this show and all the shows on the Coast to Coast Power Hour, as well as on the SJ Network, reach out to publicist Steve Joyner at www.s-j-network.com or stevesjnetwork@gmail.com. No need to thank me. I'm just out here, changing lives.
What's Your Effin' Binge is a podcast brought to you by Chris
Anchor, and Spotify. And what we talk to our guest about is what they're currently binge watching on TV. And what we do is we like to take a different approach. I don't want to know what the name of the show is that they're going to talk about before they come on. I have to actually guess it. So I ask them who, what, when, where, why, and try to figure out what it is that they're watching. A lot of times I'm able to guess it, and sometimes I'm not. And that's fine. That adds to the comedy of the show. We like to bring our guest on, whether they're a model or an actress or a producer or musician, and just let them have a platform to be able to tell everybody what they have coming up next, and also entertain everybody with what's worth watching. So I hope everybody tunes in for the next episode of What's Your Effin' Binge. Thanks. It's Chris.
This podcast is part of the SJ Network. Go to s-j-network.com for more great podcasts and for contact information on publicist Steve Joyner.